We're going to transition into our next interview. A couple weeks ago, we had a conversation with this particular coach, Coach Fire Orser, about our Wilt and Mike conversation, or who was the best player when we did our top 50 NBA players. And so this is what Coach Prior Orser had to say. We're going to give you a preview of kind of his perspective and his view on the whole situation. So take a listen for a moment.
Coach, we recently put together our top NBA players of all time, our top 50, and we had a split with Jordan and Wilt Chamberlain. Who would you consider to be the greatest NBA player of all time?
For me, I would have another person, because I look at the best players, who's played on the best teams, and who's won the most championships. Now, we all know that there's been individual guys, you know, like Wilt, or they've scored the most points, or they've done it. But who's been the best player that made the best players, that made the best players around them, that who won the most championships? And there's no question who that was, and that's Russell, Bill Russell. He, in my opinion, because he played defense, he played offense, his rebounding, his shot blocking, and then he was a great leader. I mean, he was a coach. He was, I mean, in today's world, who would be a player coach on a basketball team in the NBA? Could you name one that could coach their team? He did that. I mean, the magnitude of what he accomplished and with his leadership ability is just amazing to me. And to do it what he did. No, he had some great players around him, but he made those players better. And that's just my personal opinion on what he did. You know, and I know what happens when these kinds of questions come up. You know, we're in the now, and so people kind of forget about it. In 20 years, everybody probably will think, you know, the current players, maybe it would be LeBron or somebody, and they kind of forget about, you know, the great player Michael Jordan was, except for, you know, with the clips and things. But, you know, obviously, you know, what Russell did was just amazing, and how many championships he won, and how he made people better, and his leadership qualities and all of that. That's just my personal opinion.
Well, that was Coach Prior Orser, who was coach of Colorado School of Mines. He is the 2011-2012 Basketball Times NCAA Division II Coach of the Year. His team is ranked number one. Coach, welcome to the Real Sports Guy. How are you doing, Coach?
Good, really good. Right.
So you have Bill Russell.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, I mean, obviously you kind of hit me with that question. And, you know, and I still feel that way because, I mean, if you look at Russell, you know, who's the greatest player? Well, I think there's no – he's the greatest champion that's ever played basketball. Two NCAA Division I championships, one Olympic gold medal, 11 NBA championships, nine in a row, and two of those where he was the head coach. I mean, and I mean, it's just amazing what he did, and especially for those times in the 1960s to be appointed a head coach and to have the intelligence and the ability to lead a team as well as playing. It's just amazing to me. That concept that you're going to coach your own team and win an NBA championship is just – and he did it against the Lakers when he was a head coach. And, I mean, I just think he's the greatest champion ever to play basketball. And, I mean, with his stats and numbers, I mean, can you see a player averaging 25 rebounds a game in the NBA Finals or averaging – like 24 rebounds a game through an entire season and doing it year after year, or averaging 24 rebounds a game for an entire career with one team? That's just amazing. That's an amazing stat. And the unselfishness and all of those things that you have to do to be that kind of player. And he's just an amazing champion to me.
Great about it. I think you said a great point. We talked about this when we were talking about the top 10 players and we were talking about Bill Russell, that his ability to control a game without necessarily scoring, and that there's a value to that. And so I thought that was a great point that you raised regarding that.
Yeah, there's a value. And the thing was, because, you know, he had other players around him, but I think if you would have asked him in that time, hey, Bill, we need you to score 25 or 30 a game, he could have done it.
I mean, I think he hit around it. He probably could have done it. He decided to really focus on defense a little bit more.
Focus on defense, and he accepted that what he did as a champion, said, this is my role on my team, and this is what I can do to get my team to win championships.
That's right.
And there's
that's
not
right.
a lot of guys that can do that. And that's
right.
what he decided to do.
Well, Coach, you've had an amazing year. I mean, with the, you know, obviously being recognized for being the Coach of the Year, and I want you to talk about that. And, you know, last time we talked, you were getting ready for Metro State, and you had that tough loss at home to them.
Right.
But can you talk a little bit about your season? And, I mean, your first time being ranked number one in the country.
Yeah.
And just kind of summarize what that experience was for you.
Well, first of all, yeah. First of all, it was a great ride. I mean, we just had a great time. And now it's, you know, I think the smoke is cleared, and, you know, you really feel good about what you've accomplished. And obviously, when you're in your season, you're just trying to win that next game, to play one more game, you know. But what we accomplished with my players and for my seniors, I'm so proud of them and what they did, and putting Colorado School of Mines on the map, obviously, from a basketball standpoint. And I mean, it was just an amazing run, and obviously they have built a legacy, and you know, their leadership and everything. Hopefully, it'll continue in the future, you know, with the Colorado School of Mines basketball program. And then, obviously, I think I said it last time, we had to play Metro State. You know, their history is unbelievable, and it's a rivalry game. So throw out the NCAA tournament. It's a rivalry game. We had beaten them twice, and to beat a really good team three times, that's really, really hard to do. And, you know, usually they're the one. They were number one in the nation, you know, 2 months before that when we beat them, and they came into our place, and, you know, we upset them. Then we went to their place and won. And then they got upset and didn't go to the conference tournament. We did, so they rested. They got ready to go, ready to play. It didn't hurt their seeding. They were still a number two seed. After they had gotten beat on that Tuesday game before the RMAC tournament, we won it, and so we played more games. And, you know, what they did is they recharged, refocused, changed a few things, and got ready to play. And you know what? They were awesome. They played terrific. They made shots. They made bank shots. They made bank threes at the end of the clock. It seems like everything they threw up went in. And, you know, at that time of year, when you're in the NCAA tournament, whether it's Division II or Division I, There is a component, and that component is luck. You have to have a little luck sometimes on your side, and they had it. And it just wasn't our night. And we had shots that we normally make, we didn't make. And then we had some young guys kind of, you know, we got a little you know, we got frozen in time there a couple times. But again, they made the plays. They were quicker than we were. They made some adjustments that really helped the game, that actually changed the game for us. And, you know, we're usually the one doing that. But, you know, I thought they just did a great job. Their coaches did a great job preparing them for that game. And, you know, they shot over 50% against us. They out-rebounded us. Not many teams out-rebound us. Not many teams, you know, out-shoot us on the percentage basis, and they did both. And basically they deserved to win the game.
Well, they had a player, and I was, even in preparation for our last conversation, Reggie Evans. Who,
oh, yeah, great player.
They have a picture of him, you know, prior as I was preparing for our previous interview, just over the rim. He's an incredible-looking athlete.
Yeah, he is.
And can you talk a little bit about, you know, what kind of impact he has in the game?
Well, you know, actually, I mean, he's not just one of them. I mean, Reggie is great. He's a great athlete.
Yeah.
And I mean, he's a high flyer, and you know, he made shots. And what he did that game is he moved the ball better, and he got the other guys open shots. He actually moved the ball better, and Jefferson and, you know, and Miller, those are the guys that really hurt us. But he, you know, obviously the matchup with him and Brett Green are going against each other. It's a war.
Yeah.
It is a battle, and, you know, obviously Reggie, you know, A1, he's a great rebounder, and he really hurt us on the boards as well, obviously the offensive boards. But, you know, he is. He's one of the best players in Division II, no question about it. He can play a lot of places.
Yeah, he looked like he could play. You know, they go on and lose to Montevallo, and who face Western Washington in the championship game. Can you talk a little about those two teams in the championship, and kind of tell us about the Division II championship?
Yeah, obviously, you know, those teams are obviously good. And, you know, when we saw that, we were, you know, we thought we could have played with any of those teams. But, you know, that's just how it is. And, you know, Metro, they had the lead a lot in their game. And they're, Montevallo, they're good, and they're well coached, and they have good athletes. And the ball just didn't bounce Metro's way, you know, at the end of that game. And so then they win the next night, go on the championship game. I'm familiar with Western Washington. I used to play in that league. I've played those teams up there a couple times. what he does is he gets really, really good basketball players. And they run a simple system. They switch screens. It's difficult playing against them. Your shots come at different angles and different spaces on the floor because of their switching defense. And then you have to really guard them because they have major, major skilled players at every position. And they're just a tough matchup. And, I thought that they had the best basketball players in terms of 1 through 5. And their switching defense is bothersome. They're a team that doesn't run a lot of stuff. They just play basketball and run motion, and that's their system. He's a longtime coach there, highly successful. And, I've seen several teams, his teams there, that I thought could win a national championship, but the ball just didn't bounce his way a few times. And it did this year.
Well, you're on with the Real Sports Guys. We're on with Pryor Orser, head coach of the Colorado School of Mines, Coach of the Year, Division II. Coach, when you think about, before I move this over to Phil T., Coach, when you think about kind of the types of players, you just talked about Evans being this kind of player that can play anywhere. When people think about Division II players versus Division I players, I mean, I think sometimes people don't realize that, you know, you're playing against some athletes who could, in the right circumstances, play at the next at a different level. Can you talk a little bit different than
right.
what you might see in a Division II player versus some of the, Division I athletes we'll talk about a
right.
little bit?
Well, oftentimes in Division II, you'll see players, there's a couple different types. And in one, you'll see players that maybe have dropped down. Maybe they'd signed Division I or they went Division I and it just wasn't the right situation for them. And so, they can drop down and play right away at the Division II level. And you'll see that a lot with successful Division II teams. Or maybe you'll see a kid go junior college and maybe not have the grades or whatever to go. And oftentimes the requirements are a little easier to get in Division II schools, and where they, because if you go to junior college, you have to have your AA degree to go Division I, and you don't. You just have to have 48 transferable credits that are acceptable to that school in Division II. So sometimes you get those kind of players there that aren't as motivated as academically, but there might be a Division I level player, and so they'll end up Division II. Now the other player, like you'll see with Western Washington, you'll see those guys are like, the Division I guys will look at them, maybe they're not that athletic enough to play Division I, because Division I has the best athletes. There's no question about it. I mean, we all us D2 guys, we know that. But then those guys are borderline guys, and they're like, well, Western Washington, I look at that school, it's close to home, they have 17,000 students, it's a great place to live, it's a great place to go to school, they have a great environment there. And so they go there, and maybe they don't get that Division I offer that's acceptable to them. And then you end up with tweener guys, guys that can score, maybe guys that aren't that exceptional athletic ability, but are sneaky athletic, kind of like my guys I have, mm-hmm. and they're just great basketball players. And you put a collection of those guys on one team, and then they share the ball and move the ball and play the way Western does or play the way we do, then you can have some real good teams.
Coach, this is Phil stepping in. I want to name a few players here, and I bet our listeners won't know what they all have in common, but I'm sure you will. Darrell Armstrong, Manute Bol, Mario Elie, Charles Oakley, Jerome Kersey, Rick Mahorn, and Ben Wallace. These were all excellent Division II players.
Right, exactly.
Can you think of any players right now that you've seen play this year that may be able to make that jump to the NBA at the Division II level?
I don't know that I've seen those level of players in Division II, this year. And, obviously, all those players are special, special players. And, I haven't seen those type of players this year. But who knows? They may be out there. I mean, obviously, I'm not an NBA scout. I haven't seen, a lot of teams. But, I know there's one really, really good player at Bemidji State. And, he's really, really, really good. So, but obviously, those kind of guys, they need a break, too. They need someone to see and say, hey, this guy can play. And they get in a situation where they're given an opportunity, and that's the biggest thing. There's a lot of really good players, and some players don't get that opportunity. But those players, the Oakleys and the Darrell Armstrongs, those guys got an opportunity. Someone saw them and gave an opportunity. And I think that's the main thing. They were presented an opportunity and then took advantage of it.
Coach, as we begin to prepare for the Final Four weekend this week, when you think about breaking down a game, we've been talking a lot about the civil war that's going to happen between Louisville and
yeah.
Kentucky.
Right,
And just the great matchups, Kansas and Ohio State with the Big.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about, you know, as you break down the Final Four games, what it, break that down and give us a sense of where you think things are going to unfold.
Okay. You know, here's when I look at those teams and I've watched those teams, all four are outstanding defensive teams. They all give up around 60 points a game, some a few points more, some a few points less. They all give up around 38% defensive field goal percentage. I mean, they're all they all out-rebound their opponents. I mean, they all have such winning stats. They all shoot far more free throws than their opponents. And they're all pretty even in a lot of areas. And, I mean, they're just four really, really good teams. Really, really good defensive teams. Really, really good defensive rebounding teams. And, you know, their shooting percentages are similar. Their free throw shooting percentages are similar. And, I mean, obviously, Kentucky obviously has a little more advantage with their stat numbers in certain areas like block shots. I mean, their block shots is off the charts, 326 blocks. That's just amazing. And, I mean, and one guy gets 175 blocks. Davis gets 175. I mean, that is just off the charts. That's just unbelievable to have those kind of shot block numbers. And, you know, I mean, if you're coaching college, you're happy with a guy that has 40. And, I mean, Kentucky has one guy with 175 and another guy with over 60. I mean, that's just unbelievable. And they have several other guys that can block shots as well. So I just think the matchups, like with Louisville and Kentucky, it's a great matchup because they're both very, very good defensive teams. Louisville scores 68 a game. They give up 60. Kentucky scores 77 a game, which is, obviously I think they have a little better offensive firepower. But Kentucky only gives up 61 as well. Kentucky shoots 48%. And their opponents only shoot 37%. Louisville, they shoot, which is low, 42%. That's why they score 68 a game, but they only give up 38%. So, you know, I think in the end, I like Kentucky there because they have more weapons. They have six guys in double figures. They have more weapons, and obviously they shoot a ton of free throws. And if you look at their stats from their first game, they shot way more free throws than Louisville when they beat Louisville the first time. And I think that stat will continue because Louisville has guys. They have players. They can get to the rim more. Louisville shoots more threes, and if you shoot more threes, they don't get to the, their standing shots. They're not going to – you're not going to the line shooting threes unless they're getting fouled on those jump shots. And so then the other thing I think is Kentucky, they got all the shot blocking, so Louisville is going to be forced to make jump shots and make threes, and Kentucky has big wings. They're athletic, and I just think they just got too much firepower, and they can stop Louisville's three-point game.
You're on with the Real Sports Guys, realsportsguys.com. We're on with head coach Pryor Orser, Basketball Times, NCAA Division II Coach of the Year. Coach, before I go to Marcus for a question, you talked a lot about, I mean, you hit, if you were to think about a player that's going to have a one shining moment, you know, I love that song at the end. You know,
mm-hmm.
It makes it reflect. In some ways, I'm a little sad because that represents the end of college basketball, and I love college basketball.
Yes.
If you're thinking about one person who might have a shining moment, who do you think that person is that's going to step up?
Well, obviously, I think Davis is because he is the number one lottery pick, no question about it. I think he's going to step up. And because he is a multidimensional, he can shoot the ball. He can do a lot of things. I just like him a lot. I think he's a big time player, and he's a good kid. And I think he can dominate a game. And I think that's what he's going to do. Now on the flip side of it, if you turn the page and look at the other game, Ohio State Kansas, there's two really really good players that I think can really step up. Ohio State, very similar opponents as well. And, I mean, that is going to be a great, great game. Their numbers, their stats, almost similar in every category. And but there's two players. Sullinger, I think, is an outstanding player. And then the other one is Kansas's power forward. Help me out with this.
Robinson.
Oh, yeah, Robinson. He is. He's outstanding. I mean, 6'9", 240. He's a better athlete than Sullinger, but Sullinger's a little more polished around the glass. And I just think that those two players and Davis are my guys that can step up and have monster games. And if those guys do that, you know, any of those three teams can be successful and possibly walk out as champion.
Now, Coach, this is Marcus Game Changer. Quick question. if you're getting prepared and you're the coach, and you're Coach Cal, you're Coach Patino, you're Coach Mata, or you're Coach mm-hmm. Self, how are you getting your guys ready? This is big-time environment, a lot of pressure, a lot of distractions. How are you getting your guys prepared for this coming week?
Well, first of all, I think that the distraction piece, that I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, there's going to be family. There's going to be a lot of people around. There's going to be a lot of friends and things that are going, a lot of students going to the game. The biggest thing is staying focused and not being distracted. And, you know, conserving your energies for the basketball games and not maybe listening to the TV as much and listen to people and all that stuff. I just think you got to go in and play the game and play the type of game that you've played all year long. At this time of the year, you know, there's not a lot that you can change. And you have to stay with your systems. You got to stay with what you're doing. It's not a lot of times you can maybe put a wrinkle here and a wrinkle there, maybe a set or something to maybe take advantage of a mismatch or something like that. But for the most part, guys are going to have to go play basketball and make plays and make shots. And I just think that's what you stress the most. And play your game. Play the way we've been playing all year. Don't do anything differently. And then don't get caught up in the hype. You know, because we're on national TV, because it's a huge, huge game, there's a lot of media coverage, you still need to play the way we've played all year. You don't want to get too selfish, you know, like with stars. You know, the great players want to shoot the ball maybe the first time. They have to play within their system. And the teams that do that usually are going to want to be successful.
Well, Coach, we certainly enjoy having you on and love the breakdown that you've done of not only Division II and the Division I championship, but also what you provided us in terms of, you know, for those basketball junkies who really love history,
yeah, right.
your reflection on Bill Russell. You know, we want to welcome you. You're part of the RSC family, so we'd love to have you come back.
Sure,
join
anytime.
Us for the time, and thank you for being with us and have
right.
a great evening.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
All right, take care. That was head coach Pryor Orser, Basketball Times Division II Coach of the Year. He is a head coach at Colorado School of Mines. Incredible. I mean, if you think of it, he's an engaging person. And what's great about having someone like Coach Orser on is that you understand the great teachers that are out there in the game and the great coaches that are out there at multiple levels. You know, the game changer, myself, Phil T, we have the privilege of going to small colleges and having that experience. And you realize that the type of folks we have working in these games and teaching and working with young people is incredibly vast. And he's just one more example of the talent that you have out there. Not only the talent that is existing at Division II, as Phil T talked about the history of that, but just the coaches and the talent that exist throughout the NCAA. So, game changer. You know, you're someone who's very familiar with Division II athletics and had a chance to hear Coach Orson. Just this entire kind of, I mean, he's versatile. He's talking about history, Division I. I mean, this is a guy that knows the game. What are your initial reflections?
Just hearing him talk about the difference between Division II guys and Division I guys, I think sometimes the general perception is that there's a larger gap between D1 guys and D2 guys. And for a lot of these Division II tournament teams, the top two or three guys on their roster could play at most mid-majors and some high majors in the country at a D1 level. For whatever reasons, whether it be academics coming out of high school, maybe they want to prepare the students, or maybe, you know, they were at a D1 or they were at the, like he was talking about, bad fit, those kind of things. In the men's game, there's a ton of talented players, and that talent has trickled all the way down through the levels where you have guys at all different levels who can play the game. They may not necessarily have the size, athleticism, ratio that you need to match up with the certain skills that they've got, where you got, you know, at D2, you got 6'5", 6'6", guys playing center or power forward, but still playing at a very high level that has a wide range of skills, but they just don't have the size to be able to do the things that they can do at the D2 level that they can do at the D1 level. So that was really one thing that I just really grabbed onto, was how he talked about that there isn't that much of a separation. A lot of it is opportunity. A lot of it is, you know, circumstance as to where players end up. As we all know, game recognized game and players
That's
play.
Right. That's
so, you know, whether you're D2 or D1, if you can hoop, you'll find your way to where you need to be. You know, if you got the right mind frame and you got the right focus and you got the right work ethic, it'll all work out. I would like to see them grow their tournament more. Mm-hmm. I think it's a great way. You know, I had a younger brother who played D2 ball. Again, he was one of those kids who was at a D1 for football, got the itch to play basketball again, didn't want to sit out a year. So he went down and played Division II. That was where he needed. That worked out for him. They played in 3 Final Fours, and it was always great to see them on, to be able to watch his games on national TV and see him on national TV and have, you know, D-Wills, a PhD, hit me
that's
up
right.
with X. Hey, your brother's on. You know,
that's, right.
that's always. So I wish they would get more coverage. They would find a venue where they can highlight teams more. I think the first couple of teams that do figure that out at the D2 level are going to see themselves, you know, really begin to make a name for themselves. Trying to find some creative ways to promote. And different conferences have different formats, whether it be broadcasting games over the net, but trying to find some new ways of promoting the game and getting the D2 universities, their brands out there as far as their basketball programs, I think also would be a major get or a major boom for the Division II game.
And I also think, you know, in wrapping up conversation with Prior Orser and what we've looked at in terms of what he's been able to do, I mean, I also thought he broke down in Division I. Final Four. I mean, he was hitting it. He had it locked down. What were your reactions to some of his comments? He in terms of talking about the Final Four this weekend.
Oh yeah, man, he was spot on. He was spot on. You know that Kansas Ohio State matchup is going to be a dog fight. I mean,
yeah.
That's an overused term, but I really have no other way to put it. I'm really excited to see Robinson and Sullivan go against each other. Kraft and Taylor is going to be a great matchup. You know, who's going to shut down William Buford? Right now, I think Ohio State has more weapons. Ohio State is a squad that is just kind of good enough. Like, they don't wow you. They don't overly impress you with any one particular thing that they do. They just kind of slow walk you and win games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just kind of, you know, before you know it, you're down 6, 7. You can fight back, and then you're down another 6 or 7. And you just can't quite get over that hump with them. You know?
Mm-hmm.
That's it. I mean, I didn't pick them to go very far in my practice because I just didn't know what to make of them. I mean, they're good, but I don't know if they're that good. They don't seem like a team that's ever that good. They just seem like they're good enough right now. But they're good. They're good.
Mm-hmm.
And Kansas, I think Thomas Robinson is one of the best basketball players in the country, college basketball players in the country. If I were drafting, I take Anthony Davis first, and then Thomas Robinson will be coming off the board second. The kid can play. I think he's a gamer. I think he has the mentality you need. He may not set the world on fire ever at the pro level, but I think he's going to be one of those guys who's going to be a solid pro. His floor is much closer to his ceiling, and that's the kind of guy that you want to get. Solid guy. He's not a huge upside guy, but it's a guy that you definitely want to have available to you and who's going to be a contributor on good teams for a long time.
This has been a great run for NCAA coaches. Phil, I know you're back. I don't know if you want a chance to summarize this before we move back to the game changer to close us out.
I think it's been a great show for college basketball, starting off with Coach Lewis Preston at Kennesaw State. And we've had such an action-packed show, we almost forget that he was on the show, you know, because, you know, it's just been so action-packed. And that was an hour and a half ago, but Coach Preston came on, and, you know, he was spot on with how he's building his program down there. Listeners, I'm telling you, a year or two from now, this is going to be a program that's going to be in the NCAA making major moves, and we're going to see Coach Preston, you know, be recognized as one of the hottest coaches in the country. Then we had Coach Tamika Randall from Ohio U come on the radio, and, you know, you can see why she's starting to pull in some excellent recruits. We didn't mention it on the air, but she just landed the Player of the Year in the state of Ohio and the Columbus area. And that's a huge, huge get for her. So you're going to see big things coming out of that program, just like the men's program. And Coach Orser, you know, Coach Orser at the Colorado School of Mines. Devon's already mentioned this, but they have one of the toughest application to acceptance rates in the country. But yet he's doing what he's doing there, having one of the top programs. And these are kids that can easily play in the Ivy League, but they're choosing to play for him and get that great engineering education there at Colorado School of Mines. So it's just been a bang-up show. I'm fired up for it. Like Devon mentioned, that one shining moment statement. You know, we hear that song. Like, we're going to hear that song a week from yesterday, and that's going to be it for college basketball for a few months. So I'm just savoring it. I'm savoring this show, and I'm savoring the great college basketball coming up in the next couple of days.